Okay.
Oh, is this it here? Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Who are we talking to?
That's good. My name is Binyamin. I am a religious Jew.
Okay.
I believe that Judaism is true because I believe that there's enough evidence to believe in it.
Really?
And this even would
be
though,
good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So even though I understand you have your own objections from the scientific standpoint, I believe that Judaism has sufficient answers to your questions and enough evidence to believe in it.
So you mean you believe the Old Testament to be literally true, word for word?
Did you listen to this whole show?
Well, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Is that the case?
So I believe along with the Old Testament, there is a oral law that comes along with it that explains the words of the Old Testament. So I don't think the Old Testament can be taken at face value, no.
So how do you decide? The oral Torah over the written Torah?
Yeah. No, I think they were both given out Sinai. They're both God's word. And I think you need the oral Torah to interpret the written Torah. Like, for example, Deuteronomy 6:8 or 6:7 says that you should wrap totafos on your arm. This cannot be understood without some oral equivalent because that word totafos has no meaning. It doesn't explain what this thing is. So I think it has some oral explanation for all the verses within the Torah.
Okay, so how do you deal with the fact then that even if there is an oral Torah, which is just anybody's talking, and you've got the written Torah, and that's wrong about everything, like absolutely wrong about practically everything, back to front, scientifically and historically, ethically and morally, the written Torah is totally fucking how do we even verify an oral Torah that tells everything correctly?
Well, if you're making an internal critique on my beliefs, then I would just answer that the oral Torah was also given at Sinai. It has the same authority as the written Torah. I agree with you.
The written Torah that is absolutely wrong, that describes the earth as flat, that completely fucks up biology, that advocates horrible atrocities, all of this, that can't be defended at all, that has equal authority with the oral Torah?
Well, what's your standard of interpretation for the written Torah? How can you take this text at face value when it has an oral equivalent? For the written Torah, I apologize.
Well, I don't, how would I even verify?
Give us an example of something that you acknowledge is ridiculously, hopelessly false in the written Torah, and tell us how the oral version salvages that. Give us an example.
Like on a face value, what I think is ridiculous on a face value.
Well, the whole thing's, it's ridiculous top to bottom. So, I mean, just take your pick. Yeah, at face value, the face value, the written version, written scripture, and then tell us how the oral tradition salvages it. You know, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can do that. And yeah, I will respond. I just want to say, I want to bring up some, what I believe are proofs, the validity of the Torah, but I will respond to what you said. So I think that Numbers 15:32-36 cannot be understood as just without a moral, without an oral equivalent, because according to the plain understanding of the verse, a person was doing what he thought was okay, and God killed him on the Sabbath for no reason. While there's an easy internal way to understand this with the oral law, I think that it's indefensible, just based off of the written word alone.
Okay, but so this isn't really what we're talking about here, right? Because you're talking about stories from which you can devise a moral code. And I mean, Aaron did bring that up, and I do agree that it's morally indefensible. But we're talking more about like how the universe developed in life. And we're talking about things that brush up against the scientific understanding. Cool. So since it's scientifically indefensible and categorically wrong about everything it says from a scientific standpoint, tell us how the oral tradition salvages a scientific inaccuracy in the Bible. That's what we're trying to talk about.
Sure. So I'll tell you some things that the oral tradition resolves. For example, you say that according to the plain understanding of the Bible, the earth is flat, but that was never the understanding according to the ages. these sages who had the oral tradition, who knew on how to understand the text, always understood this, the earth was a sphere. There's a Talmud about this where they explicitly say that the earth is a sphere.
Then why does the Bible, why does the written Torah say otherwise?
What is, again, because you, according to your subjective understanding of the verses.
Excuse me, objective, yeah, not dependent on my own personal opinions, but dependent upon the facts outside of them. The facts outside of my personal opinions, which makes it objective, not subjective. You may know Hebrew, but I know English. Okay, so this is how objective and subjective, they're different. I'm talking about objective, not subjective.
Yeah, so if you would agree that two people can read the same thing and understand it differently, then any interpretation of the Bible would just be
subjective. What happens when we get 3 or 18, or what happens when it's not just the number of people, but when they can show the etymology of the language, or when they can show the data that proves the point? Then one person can show that 18 people are wrong. What then?
So you can show via etymology why, like, Zechariah 8:3 is saying the earth is flat. I don't think that's
what about in Job? What is it, 39:14? Mm-hmm. I think when God himself says that the earth takes the form of a seal of wax under a seal, which, what is that shape? It's a flat disc with a bit of topography on it. And that's just one example. My friend Lawrence Ufo, who was a Bible scholar himself, made a video, like a 45-minute video, showing dozens of different places in the Bible that always, consistently, only ever describe the earth as flat. Always.
Look,
never an indication of a sphere. I've got other things that I can contribute to that, where everything, literally everything that the Bible says about the earth in relation to the rest of the cosmos is wrong. Demonstrably flat out wrong.
The sun is not bigger than all the other stars.
The moon is not the same size as the sun. The stars are not something different than the sun. The stars do not have personalities and cannot come down to earth to do battle with a human being. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a Christian thing. Yeah. You wouldn't know about that one. So I'll leave that one alone.
But so the point is, where are you getting this oral the oral teaching, and how does it rectify any of that? Like, we still haven't gotten this answer here. Like, if you want to bend over backwards and deny the illegitimacy, scientifically speaking, of everything in there, help us out here. Where are you getting this other stuff?
So I'll answer both of your questions. I'll answer, because one is external, one is internal. So I have no reason why to grant that Job is literal there. Job also says he suspends the earth over nothing. That's something you would agree with, that the earth is not held up by anything, which was an ancient belief.
Okay, but this says nothing about the shape. It
contradicts itself and says that it's held up on pillars so that it will not move.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about a sphere.
But
yeah, again, and the Bible is also depicted as the largest thing in the universe, covered by a firmament that we know does not exist. And the sun and the moon and the stars are not contained within where the firmament would have been if there was a firmament. And there's no water above where the firmament isn't. So the fact that the written Torah is totally wrong does not justify an oral Torah. We're still waiting for you to explain. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'll explain, but I just want like a minute to explain, because this is important. So you're doing two things right now. One, you're making an internal critique, meaning that how can you understand with the oral tradition what these verses are saying? And I would say that these verses are metaphorical. The understanding of the people, of the sages, was always, based off these verses too, was always the prominent scientific view. In fact, we even affirm the Big Bang. It says that before creation, the earth was smaller than the pupil, or the world was smaller than the pupil of one's eye. And second off, as to your external critique, where do we get this oral tradition from? We can point to oral tradition from the times of the Christian Bible, from the Second Temple period. Obviously, the further you go back, the less evidence you have. But we can point to the Tefillin in the Qumran caves. We can point to the references of it in the Christian Bible, which I'll use as evidence, because it's
still waiting for an example, man. Where in the oral tradition does it correct a scientific inaccuracy in the written version? Still waiting for an example.
Well, so I think you're kind of begging the question by assuming that there's scientific inaccuracy in the first place. And what I mean by that is because your interpretation.
We just told you how all of it is unbelievably and indefensibly wrong. There's no fallacies here. It is objectively incompatible with reality and what we know to be factually true scientifically.
Yeah, is the sun the same size as the earth?
Yeah.
Is the sun smaller? Excuse me. Is the sun the same size as the moon? And is the sun smaller than the earth?
No. But I don't
look,
think
he knows it's not. I mean, we don't need to go down the list again. The point is you acknowledge that all of that is wrong. And so you tried to pivot to like, okay, these are metaphors. So beyond the question of like, why would it be full of these misleading metaphors? Fine, if you want to go that way. But again, I'm still waiting for you. You keep pivoting to this oral tradition. And I'm asking now a third time, give me an example. What did who said it? What did they say? And how does it correct an inaccuracy and put it in a more believable context? I'm still waiting for that example.
Yes, and I want to clarify what I said when I said you're begging the question. What I meant is your subjective, according to your subjective understanding of the text that you make based off of your own understanding, you're saying that there's scientific inaccuracy. But
how am I interpreting
understanding of the demonstrably false statements that we can show are factually false because of the facts? The sun and the moon are not the same size. The sun is smaller than the earth. These are facts.
If someone says this car is red, do I have a subjective interpretation of that? No, it says the car is red. They meant the car is red. So you can say it's a metaphor and then point to something else that explains how the car is red. It didn't really mean the car is red, but it's not my subjective interpretation when I say, oh, he said the car is red. That's so he means the car is red. Right? There's nothing to interpret there.
When you're dealing with a text like the Bible, which commonly uses like a poetic language, like in Micah 5:7, which says that the remnant of Jacob will be like a lion among the among the beasts of the forest, meaning we're going to be consumed by all the nations. So yeah, you can't take a objective understanding of it. Like you yourself can only make a subjective understanding of the text because you don't have any traditions of the people that wrote it. Now again, why ought I take your understanding that when the Torah says that the world, by the way, the Talmud and I think Sanhedrin says that the 6 day thing is not literal, and this comes before the understanding that the world was much older. So this is it's significant because it's written.
It's written by people who had no idea about anything at all. So where does the oral tradition come in that salvages it? Huh?
And that's why they got everything wrong.
Well, yeah, but they're religious Jews in the 6th century who have no idea how old the earth is, and they're writing that it's not meant to be taken literal. So that that clues you in. They have no reason not to believe.
Okay, clues you in.
You started this.
The Torah is wrong about everything that the written Torah is wrong about, because I don't know how well Dave knows this, but I mean, I can talk to you for a long time about the things the written Torah got wrong. Where he was asking, Dave was asking you to show somewhere where we can verify that the oral Torah, whatever the fuck that means, corrects an error in the written Torah. Are you just going to give me where a relatively recent rabbi said something to try to correct an earlier error?
Remember, we're trying to get from an acknowledgement that everything in the written Torah is wrong to Judaism is true. That's what you started this with. So we're on the same page that everything is wrong in there. So now we're waiting for you to get us from the everything is wrong to the Judaism is true. And I'm still waiting for something.
According to your subjective understanding, it's wrong. No. I agree. But you don't know how to understand
the
text.
That yours is the subjective understanding. Ours is the objective. Quit accusing us of having your problem. You have your problem. You deal with your problem. We don't have your problem. Our position is objective. Quit making the false accusation. If you want to have communication, quit projecting your own shit.
But why should I grant your understanding is objective? You haven't given me a good reason to.
I did give you several good reasons, yes. Things we can objectively verify are not true in the Bible. This is not my subjective understanding.
Don't make us list them again, dude.
The sun and the moon are lights, that they're the same size, that the stars are fixed in the firmament, that there are windows in the firmament and water above where the firmament isn't? No, this
reading
is not
stuff literally is not a subjective interpretation. It's just a reading it literally, right? So if you want to say that that it's metaphorical and you're admitting that it's just that they had no idea what anything was, you've admitted that multiple times now, then you're agreeing that we're going from them having no idea. So how do we get from there to Jesus?
Objectively wrong. Our position is objective, not subjective. So quit trying to paint us with the brush of your own failure. Okay?
No, because you are assuming. I want to be very clear. Let me clarify my argument, okay?
Well, you're going to tell me I'm assuming something. So, be very careful what you say next.
Okay. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, okay? You are looking at the Bible. You are looking at verses like the sun is the same size as the earth, and you're saying, how, you know, I'm taking it literally. How can that be true? And I'm coming back to you. I'm saying that's not meant to be taken literally, and I have an understanding.
If it says something that's actually false, the defense of that is not that you weren't supposed to read it as true. Yeah, people think you're supposed to read it as true. So that's objectively false, and people are being misled by it. But now you want to say that your religion, which is based on this entirely fictitious document, is somehow vindicated by an oral Torah that we can't check.
Right.
What is the oral Torah? And I'm now siding with Dave here completely. Give us an example that we can objectively verify.
What does it
say?
What does the oral thing say about the size of the sun and the moon? How does it justify the objectively erroneous thing in the written tradition? Does it say anything? Does it help us out there? Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah. So I'll give you an example that you'll have to look it up. I apologize. I can't quote the original source off the top of my head. The Talmud Yerushalmi says that the earth is shaped like a ball. You can look that up right now. This is written by people in the 4th or 3rd century, so it's significant.
Okay,
because
so the earth was established to be a sphere in the 2nd century BC, and you're now going 6 centuries after that to say that 600 years after science verified that the earth is so spherical, that some rabbi somewhere said, oh, our ancient document was totally fucking wrong. Mm-hmm. So let me just say, it was wrong, and it's really a sphere. That's your argument.
Again. So if you're internally critiquing my beliefs,
how am I internally critiquing?
Because you're saying that according to your understanding, this doesn't make sense.
What is the objective fact? When was the Earth verified to be spherical? 2nd century BCE, Eratosthenes.
A little before, right? Classical Greece at the very least.
At least by Eratosthenes,
in a documented way.
And so now you're going 6 centuries after that. Do you see how it's not impressive that 600-year-old news? Somebody finally admits, it's a sphere. Science proved that 600 years ago. Well, the Bible that was written at about the same time is wrong.
Are you internally or externally critiquing my beliefs?
I'm using objective fact, right? The things we can both verify.
You're making a critique, right?
How am I making a critique? These are objectively verifiable facts that we're talking about. You said you have a written Torah and an oral Torah. The written Torah is dead ass wrong about everything, but somehow the religion based on it is completely true. For reasons that you refuse to provide.
Again,
how can I make a critique any other way?
Okay, I'm trying to. So there are two. You can make an external critique or an internal critique. So are you affirming my views, or are you saying that this doesn't work within your worldview? This is contradicting
my
itself.
Worldview?
Or are you saying that I don't understand?
What do you think my worldview is? My worldview is that I don't want to be fooled into believing anything that is not evidently true.
Okay, well, I mean, I just want to point out, it's kind of up to me to prove it to be true and not you to come up. I think you're being a little bit dishonest. I'm not trying to insult you, but
be very careful about the next thing you say.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're jumping to, this is the interpretation, this is the objective interpretation of the verse. This, I'm going to take it as literal.
We're just telling you what the fucking thing says, dude. We're just telling you the words that are in it and how they and how they're wrong. So if you offer an alternate interpretation from something else, then provide it.
This is not just our opinion. This is shit you can look up yourself to verify. Objective, not subjective. Doesn't matter what you feel about it. It says what it says.
The earth is objectively round. Yes. I'm saying your understanding of the verse is subjective. It's based off of how you read it and how you understand it.
So I read it literally. Does it say the thing or not? Is the statement that it's making true or false?
Read it literally.
Objectively verifiable. Is there a firmament with windows in it that lets the rain in? So, from the waters above the firmament, and that the sun and the moon are inside the firmament, which means the rain comes from above the sun. Any of that true?
Literally,
the point is that if we're talking about the shape of the earth, what we're trying to make you understand is that when the Torah was written, they didn't know that the earth was a sphere, so they didn't write that. They thought it was flat. And then hundreds and hundreds of years later, after it was firmly established empirically that the earth is a sphere, that's what you're going to claim some kind of oral tradition that makes Judaism true, when it's just some people who later on learned that the earth is a sphere and said it out loud. And that doesn't in any way justify the validity of the Torah, because it's still wrong.
In order to say that, you have to assume that the verse is to be taken literal. Can you give me one good reason why I should take the verses literal?
Okay, so if we don't take the verses literally, then we don't take the verses. If it doesn't mean what it says, and it doesn't matter what it says, and it doesn't matter what it means, then fuck it. Why do we even have it? So how is the religion based on lies that you're not even supposed to listen to? That's what we're telling you. Disregard the entirety of the Bible.
How does that follow? How does that follow?
You just told me that it doesn't mean what it says and it doesn't matter what it means, because it's not supposed to be taken literally.
I want to be very clear.
Ad hoc justification. You can go back and say it meant anything that you wanted it to mean, right? You can say, oh, well, I'm going to interpret it to mean what we now know to be true because I say so. Do you have a contemporaneous written thing?
I'm sorry, Dave. Your understanding is subjective. It's based on your feelings. It's not based on the external facts. So ours is based on the external facts because ours is objective. Yours is subjective. Your problem, not ours.
I reject that, because if you're internally making a critique on my religion,
I'm doing it as externally as I possibly can. I'm even putting it up to peer review. I argue with believers every goddamn day for the last couple decades. Okay, I'm being as external about this as I possibly can be. You are finding out now an internal pain somewhere around the colon area when you realize how badly you're doing at this.
Can you concede that internally my religion is consistent?
No. Not in any capacity. Not in any capacity is your religion consistent.
Can you give me one thing that isn't consistent?
I think I already have given you several.
Done the list like a dozen times, dude.
I can add to the list. I've got an awful lot of experience. We could talk about an awful lot of things that are wrong with your religion. Do you want to just widen the gamut and do everything wrong with Judaism? Or can you answer Dave's question to show him something you got right?
Look, let's make it nice and simple. Let's make it nice and simple so that let's use an analogy here. I wrote down in a book, my car is red. And then we find out later that no, it's not. It's actually blue. And you're trying to argue that the book where I wrote my car is red is true. It's true. Well, that's a thing that's wrong. So you can argue, well, we don't want to interpret my car is red literally. It was a metaphor. He actually meant blue. And so we have this, they have this oral tradition from somebody who after the fact saw the car and said, oh no, the car is blue. And he meant the car is blue. But he wrote the car is red because it's poetic. It's more poetic that way. Do you understand how that doesn't make any fucking sense?
Again, so I don't think you understand what I'm trying to say. Okay.
I made it as simple as humanly possible for you, dude.
You are equating the Bible with the statement, the car is red. So when the Bible speaks in poetic language, I'm telling you, it's not meant to be taken literally. All right.
Okay. So don't take "the car is red" literally, but we're still arguing that the book that contains "the car is red" is true. So what oral tradition or whatever you're talking about are you going to justify retroactively that "the car is red" is somehow true, even though we know it's blue, right? How are we going to, how are we going to get a different interpretation that somehow still validates the religion based on the book that says the car is red?
And if you can't answer his question, okay, I've got another one that goes back to the beginning of what you said.
So again, this, I would say you're assuming the oral tradition came later. Again, if you're internally critiquing me, I would say it came from Sinai. But if you want to give me an example of something, if you want me to give you an example of something that, you know, is godly, that proves the oral tradition is from God, I could point you to like Nida 5:2, which says explicitly that there's not one single fish on the entire planet Earth that has scales and not fins, I believe, or maybe it's the other way around. This is scientifically proven to be true. There's not one single fish on the entire planet Earth that you will find that has scales. I want to make sure it's scales and not.
So you think that people knowing a thing about what fish look like is proof of an entire religion?
Isn't that a reference to lobsters? Isn't that a reference to crustaceans, right?
No.
Like you're forbidden to eat the fish without fins that have scales, which has been popularly identified as crustaceans, so you can't eat shrimp scampi or lobster thermidor?
No.
But also,
every fish has to have scales and fins.
But there are fish without scales, right?
Lots of them.
Yeah, but there's no fish that has scales but not fins.
Except for the crustaceans that I just mentioned. So again, crustaceans have the scales but not the fins. So regardless. We're still looking for something true. We're still looking for something that was supposed to be true about your religion, and you just quoted you just quoted part of the written Torah that you've already told us cannot be taken seriously. It's supposed to be read metaphorically. It doesn't mean what it says, and it doesn't matter what it says. It doesn't matter what it means. What is the oral and how importantly, the important part, how do we verify that your oral Torah is true? Because you said at the beginning something that I know you cannot defend, and I think you know it too. You're calling me dishonest, but you know this too. You said you had evidence that Judaism is true. No, you don't.
Well, I mean, I could point to like the argument from prophecy. I could point.
You
to
don't have evidence, do you? They always go to arguments instead of evidence, and then the arguments are never logically valid. I'm asking for evidence.
Fact. So, yeah, evidence.
I'm not asking for logically fallacious arguments. I asked for evidence. You said you had evidence, not arguments.
Evidence makes something more likely to be true.
Evidence is a fact that is positively indicative of and or exclusively concordant with one available position or hypothesis over any other.
Okay, so would you agree that if I could provide something that makes my position more likely to be true, it's evidence, right?
If it's a fact, if it's something we can verify to be true, can you show me anything? Anything that we can objectively just look it up and verify that it is true, that is also supportive of your position over any alternate possibility?
Is it objectively true that the Jews in 70 AD were scattered throughout the lands?
Is this something that we can just look up and find out?
Yes. 100%.
Okay, so you understand that's what objective
means. What are you talking about?
We can look at, regardless how we feel about it, we can check the facts and find out. Okay.
100%.
It's a very vague claim.
Look up Jewish diaspora. Yeah, you can do that.
Okay. So people went places.
Yeah.
That's the claim.
Yeah. That's objective.
Vikings went places too, but that doesn't prove Odin.
As a matter of fact, that's an interesting argument. I have a genealogy. My immediate family is Mormon, but my great, my ancient family was Nordic. And in our genealogy, Mormons do genealogies. I actually have documents recording great ancestry in the second century with Odin and Freya of Asgard in my genealogy. Not even
again,
kidding.
I'm trying to build up an argument. Could I finish my argument? Okay. Can we agree that the Bible was mainly finished by the year 7, like that the Bible was not edited? There's no historians widely believe the Bible stayed the same from 70 AD onwards.
No. I do a regular Bible study with Bible scholars and people that not only speak Hebrew, people who not only speak Hebrew but also Aramaic and can read Assyrian cuneiform. And yeah, I don't think they would agree with that.
They wouldn't agree that after the spread of all of the Jewish people around the entire, so they collectively,
what I hear every week is that every part of the Bible was rewritten over and over again. And we have no idea how many times or by how many different people, but nothing stayed as it was for any considerable length of time.
Well, I'm not talking about like Mark 16.
But it wouldn't matter, would it? Because that's the oral Torah, which we've already conceded is completely wrong. So it doesn't matter what it says.
Okay, wait, actually, never mind. We have the Dead Sea Scrolls for this. I apologize. So the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay, because one of the guys on my show is Dr. Kip Davis, who's an expert on the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Sorry, the Dead Sea Scrolls verify that the Bible was largely finished, including all of its prophecies, in the year 70 AD, correct?
70 AD, okay.
Yes.
The Bible, but yeah, I would accept that, yeah. If you're talking about the Hebrew Bible, yes.
Yeah, Hebrew Bible. Obviously, the Action Bible changed a large amount, but the Hebrew Bible stayed largely the same. So I can point to the argument from prophecy, which is evidence, which you might say it's not an objectively verifiable fact,
then it's not
it is
evidence.
Objectively. You would concede it's objectively verifiable.
Show me. How am I going to concede that it's objectively verifiable?
So you defined objectively verifiable as like I could look up a Google search and I would see this is immediately true. That's what that was your definition.
A little more complicated than that, but I'm still waiting for the punchline here. You're saying you're talking about the timeline of this stuff getting written, and then what? What are we leading up to here?
Yeah,
so let's get to the point.
Punchline. The Bible clearly predicts a second Jewish exile before the Messiah comes. This was
but it was only meant to be taken metaphorically. So it doesn't matter what it says. There's an oral Torah that corrects all of this, but you just won't show us how to know that.
But also, come on, man, like have a higher standard than like there's like, does it say like there will be a war somewhere? Weather will happen. People will go places. No,
very clear, dude. Extremely clear.
There will be wars and rumors.
All peoples have been exiled and conquered and conquer others. And it just, that's how history.
And a man will lose his hammer.
Largely in diaspora? No, very specific. This is not mundane. All right. Don't try to get out of it by saying it's mundane. Micah 5:7 and Hosea 3:4-5 are not mundane. They predicted the total destruction and diaspora of the Jewish people. This is clear evidence. And if you don't think that
what do you mean total destruction? Do Jews exist? So it's not true.
I mean total destruction of the land. It says that there won't be a king.
So the land
is there a hole there now where that land used to be? The fuck are you talking about, man?
There are people that live there now.
Why don't you look at it yourself?
Because
you're the expert here, dude. Tell us what it says.
If it didn't exist, we couldn't look at it, could we?
You're saying things that are both mundane and not true at the same time. So what are you talking about?
And you're quoting a book that we've already agreed. It doesn't matter what it says. It's only supposed to be taken metaphorically. Here you are reading it literally. You can't do that. It's only metaphorical.
You know why this doesn't work? Because first off, that's internal to my position. And second, if you can't make an internal argument right now. Because there's nothing.
I have very low tolerance for philo bro bullshit. Just talk like a person.
Being as external as possible.
Okay, so you're being external. So yeah,
I want to check. Is there anybody still waiting?
I think.
Is there anybody on the phone lines?
We're getting very close to the end of this call. This is really, really not. This is not.
If there's anybody that's been waiting on hold, I'm sure they would be awfully frustrated at listening to this conversation because this was some bullshit.
Can we agree it predicts the diaspora of the Jewish people?
No. Because you keep quoting a book that was only supposed to be read metaphorically, so it doesn't matter what it says, so why do you keep quoting it?
But you're not saying anything concrete. You said the destruction of the people, well, they weren't destroyed. The destruction of the land, well, it wasn't destroyed.
And you said you had evidence, and then admitted that all you have are arguments, so you don't have evidence. Why did you waste our time?
Makes my claim more likely, and if it's within an argument, obviously, if it's an inductive argument, obviously that's evidence.
But you said not true things.
Yes.
Okay.
You said things that are not true.
Two claims the Bible makes that helps us verify whether or not it's true.
We're
and
done.
You don't have them.
We are done now. And I suggest that you think about what you've done and said here and why you believe what you do, because it's not good reasons. Your argument was bad. All of your arguments were bad, and you should feel bad
over me because you're not intelligent. Like, okay.
All right. Get this prick out. Free Palestine. You're not intelligent. You don't get it because you're dumb. I've said not a single intelligent thing for how long were we talking to that jerk? Fucking 45 minutes?
That was.
But
that
no,
was
we're the dumb ones.
That was such a frustrating call. Have you noticed when you talk to religious apologists or just any defenders of the faith that logic just doesn't seem to exist?
Not at all. And I mean, this is why these kind of call-in shows are like both fun and frustrating, because it's frustrating, like slamming your head against a brick wall for 40 minutes, but they're also fun because you know for a fact that absolutely nobody is going to be even remotely challenging to talk to, because even you look at like William Lane Craig or like who they hold up as the most intellectual, unbeatable version of the apologist. And I listen to those people and I'm like, these people are morons. Nothing they're saying can be substantiated at all. So you go down a few rungs on the ladder. It's like, I don't even need to be listening to this person. It's ridiculous.